Welcome to the Celtics Journal podcast. I am your host for this week's episode, Jeff Kidger. And I am joined by NBC Sports Washington's Mike DiPrisco. Welcome back, Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me back. I'm a little surprised, I won't lie, after coming on post-trade deadline to talk a little bit about Mo Wagner. And Mo Wagner lasted about 2 weeks on the roster, so I guess you were willing to expose yourself to my bad takes yet again, so I appreciate that.
Of course, yeah, we tried the Mo Wagner experiment. He tried to crack the lineup a couple of times, and then it became apparent that he wasn't going to be there. So they signed Jabari Parker in his place. But we have a lot to talk about today, a lot on the docket, including going over last week's 1-3 stint. Also have to go over the bench being a complete liability, whether we should be worried about Jason Tatum, and then going into next week, predicting those four games, and then we'll wrap it up with our final thoughts. How does that sound?
That sounds delightful.
Excellent. Okay, so this past week, the Celtics went 1-3 with losses to the Zach LaVine-less Bulls, the shorthanded Nets, and the LaMelo and Hayward-less Hornets. So I went 2-2 with Adam going 1-3. So I'm expanding my lead on the season by one more game.
You're just a future teller.
Yes. 500 prediction on the week. I know all. I was feeling a little bit too good about it. I was like 6-1 before that, so yeah. I needed to come down to earth.
Well, the way you describe those losses just makes it all the more sad.
Yeah, I wasn't at the time worried about the Bulls because the Celtics were also missing a lot of guys, even though they had both the Jays for that game. Right. I thought that was just bad loss, you move on. Mm-hmm. It happens, and then they did it again against the Hornets later in the
league. Yeah, you can't have two of those in a five-game stretch.
No, absolutely not. The Celtics started playing like they had earlier in the season, so mm-hmm. I'm a little bit worried that they're going to revert back to that version of themselves instead of the six-game win streak Celtics. Do you think that's something I should be worried about?
I mean, I think in all of those games, except for maybe that Hornets game, which was seemed to be just a travesty of a basketball game to watch from a Celtics point of view. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed like in the Bulls game, they played about a half of good basketball and just ran out of steam, which we've seen this year with them. Phoenix, they looked good pretty much throughout. Brooklyn, that I don't even know what to say about that game. They didn't have anybody except for Tatum and Smart, and it showed. So I'm not sure what you can take away from that game. And then, yeah, so Charlotte, I would say the only game I would be worried about from this past week was the most recent one, which is against the Hornets, because it just seemed like they didn't come out with any energy or, like, I think they remembered the last time they beat the LaMelo-less Hornets and thought it was just going to be a walk, and it was not. Terry and them, they came to play.
Yeah, Terry had different ideas. But the Nets game was the first time all season where I was just like, have Tatum take every single shot. Mm-hmm. I don't care because I've been frustrated all season about their constant ISO play.
Yeah.
But it was apparent that the bench just couldn't do anything. They didn't even look like NBA players. So I was just like, just give Tatum, give him the ball, and we'll see what happens. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, and I think the thing about that game, too, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is just like both teams were undermanned. The Celtics were without four of their probably five best players, six best players. And the Nets didn't have Harden or Durant or Claxton. But it was like the second and third stringers on the Nets were just clearly NBA players. just clearly guys who could actually do stuff if given the opportunity, when the Celtics end of things just was hideous at times.
Yeah, it was really, anytime it got close and then Tatum went to the bench, a 6-point deficit turned into like 15 points in the matter of 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, you can't have that.
To the point where I was asking myself, do you, in the third quarter, do you even bother bringing Tatum back in? Or do you just give him the rest that he looks like he desperately needs?
Yeah, he does. He does look gassed.
But what's also really concerning about it is that the one win the Celtics got came against the Phoenix Suns, who just could not hit a three for their lives. Mm-hmm. And they were on the second night of a back-to-back, too. So it's, we didn't even really beat a full-strength team.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm hoping. Go ahead.
No, I definitely see what you're saying there. It's like their only win of the week, their best win of the week, wasn't exactly like, if you're going to beat the Suns, you hope to beat them on a regular night where they're at full strength and playing well, and they weren't. But that's okay, because I feel like the Celtics have lost to teams where they have similar performances, and just the nature of this godforsaken NBA season, I'm willing to just, you know, you take a win and move on. But I see what you're saying, that like, not every win can be a Nuggets comeback. But I see what you're saying in terms of, you know, they did get a little lucky with that one. They could have very, very easily gone 0-4.
Exactly. So as it currently stands, the Celtics are in the sixth spot, holding on to staying out of the play-in tournament. But they are tied with the Miami Heat. So if the Celtics fall into the play-in tournament, they're going to actually have to potentially go through the Wizards, who have won 8 games in a row and 11 in a row with Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
Can you go over real quick what's changed for them?
Defense would be the number one difference in play and just results for the Wizards. Since the trade deadline, they've had like a top 3 defensive rating, which for this team, over at least over the last 2 years, would be just unspeakably, like, you'd never imagine this team would be top 10 in defense for any given stretch of a season. You just hope they outscore people. But between the defense and Russell Westbrook rounding into form like he did last year with Houston around the same time, I feel like that's what you're seeing. Him and Bradley Beal are starting to figure out how to play together and take turns dominating in their own way, where it felt like early on in the year one of them was always deferring to the other. But now I think they've got a good chemistry going.
Yeah, it feels like they've come to a point where, so if they make it into the playoffs, I don't think they're going to beat any of the top 2 seeds.
No.
But they could just end up being a team that could give them an unnecessary headache. Yep. And if, as far as the Celtics are concerned, last week we were talking about the Celtics potentially making noise.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Celtics have to run into a team that's as hot as the Wizards are, we could be looking at losing in the play-in tournament, which would be a very, very hard 180 from where we were just a week ago.
Yeah, it's the nature of this season, I guess. 1 week you're thinking, all right, four seed is a lock. Get the Knicks or the Hawks in the first round, get rid of them in 5 games. Maybe get the Sixers in the second round. You know, Embiid's a miserable matchup for you, but you've always beaten the Sixers. You get to the conference finals, just where you were last year through all of this. But now you're talking of getting upset in the play-in by the Wizards just 7 yeah. days later.
It has been a tough couple of days for Celtics Nation. But the biggest issue that the Celtics have is, like we talked about, their bench, where a huge portion of them are just not NBA players.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to run through the Celtics roster real quick and see if you agree with me.
Okay, let's do it.
Right now, the Celtics currently have about 7 guys who are getting the appropriate playing time on a normal functioning team.
So, like, if you put them anywhere else, they'll probably be in this kind of role.
Exactly.
Roughly.
Okay. So, and those guys are Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Robert Williams, Marcus Smart, Kemba Walker, Tristan Thompson, and Evan Fournier.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are the guys that should be getting the bulk of the minutes and are correctly placed. And that's okay for the playoffs looking forward. The line rotations usually get down to 7 or 8 guys, so that's okay. But what I'm worried about is that there are the guys like Shemi, Carson Edwards, Grant Williams on certain nights, Tremont Waters, Taco, Aaron Nesmith, and Luke Kornet, who debatably, the way that they've been playing, shouldn't be on an NBA roster.
Yeah.
Are there any of those third string or lower end guys that you believe I'm wrong about?
No, I don't think there are any, of, like, that list you just ran through. I wouldn't say that's definitely a guy to put in with that first tier with, you know, at least Thompson and Fournier as lock rotation players, just like key contributors. I think your best bets of that group are Romeo Langford, Peyton Pritchard, and depending on the night, Jabari Parker and Grant Williams to give you some sort of, and Kornet, to give you some sort of like matchup spot minutes, like with if you want to go small but still have a little bit of size, you can play Grant at the five and just run 5 minutes with him at center. And that's usually where he plays well, but that's beside the point. And, you know, if you need to put Romeo Langford on, you know, a wing perimeter scorer and just take some pressure off of the Jays for at least a couple minutes, I think that's, they're going to be their lane when the games matter the most. But yeah, other than those first seven, it's not pretty, just because it's a lot of young and unproven players who, you know, they're developing under fire because they're being put in these situations where they have to contribute at a high level.
Yeah. I'm hoping in the offseason, I don't think they need to blow everything up, but to get guys correctly positioned in the rotation will be really important for Danny in this offseason, I think.
Yeah, I think definitely in that Brooklyn game, I was watching it and thinking, like, there needs to be some kind of cleaning at the back end of the roster, because there's a lot of guys. And I think I'll discount Tremont Waters and Taco because they're two-way players, and those are on a year-to-year basis anyway. But, like, Carson Edwards and Shemi Ojeleye.
Shemi, yeah.
Like, those type of guys. Maybe even Kornet if he doesn't play as well as he has been. But just, you'd like, and I think this is a reason why the Jabari Parker signing made a lot of sense, is like, you would like the end of the bench guys to be at least playable when you need them. Whereas I feel like the only times I see Carson Edwards in the game is when it's a blowout or the team came out flat and you just need a guy who will take a contested three and he might make it just to give you a boost. Shemi, I'm a big fan of Shemi's, but it just doesn't seem like he's good enough at any facet of the game. Like, his best attribute is defense, and I just feel like all he does is mirror the guy he's guarding rather than actively stop him. So there's just that.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I just think there, at some point, you need to clear out these young guys you're hoping develop and bring in actual, you know, NBA players with proven track record, even if it's a veteran that you have to convince only get in every 3 games, 4 games.
Yeah, just cut your losses and move on. But I did want to talk to you about two of these guys in particular, because they're people that I'm fans of, or I'm a fan of, but I'm getting a little bit worried.
Okay.
And those two are Grant Williams and Evan Fournier. I've been hearing a lot about Grant recently on how he doesn't deserve to even be on the roster, let alone the rotation.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
You think
so? That's a bit much. Yeah, I think there's definitely there's definitely nights where Grant Williams doesn't look like he belongs anywhere near a basketball court. It's just mm-hmm. like the dumb plays and the turnovers and just the blown assignments. Like there are nights where he just looks awful. But to say he doesn't deserve to be on a roster is a bit of a stretch. He's in his second year and he's playing a role that doesn't really suit his skill set.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his, and I thought during the win streak that he did a great job. But the last four games compared to the previous 10 when the Celtics were winning almost every game, mm-hmm. His defensive rating went from a 99.5 to almost 104. So he's on the court to defend at a high level and be a smart player, and he's not even doing that. Because we know he can't really score, maybe hit a three every once in a while, but if he's not doing the one thing he is brought on the court to do, then he has no place out there.
Correct.
But the other person being Evan Fournier, and I know he's just coming back from COVID, but he has played about 41-42 minutes in his two games, and he has 2 points, and he is 0-for-10 from the field. And no one seems to be talking about that, maybe because Tatum has had such a hard time with COVID.
Yeah.
So we're cutting them some slack, but that is really, really bad. Do you think that's something that the Celtics should be worried about?
The 2 points in the 40 minutes.
Yeah, the two points, whether it's he's not shooting enough, the fact that he's shooting 0%.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
Well, yeah, Fournier's just had a very interesting first, month with the Celtics. Because even after the Celts traded for him, he had to sit out a few games because of protocol. Yes. And then he had this same kind of start where he couldn't make a shot. He was coming up short on everything, it seemed like. And he wasn't being aggressive. He just kind of looked at... Like, he's just getting his cardio in out there. But then he made, 11 threes in a row? Something crazy.
Yeah.
Before he got COVID and had to sit out another 2 weeks. So I think it's just like, with a player like him, I feel like his confidence is tethered to his shots going in. Because that's the first thing like you said with Grant, having to play defense at a high level. Like, that's the reason he's in. The reason the Celtics traded for Fournier, the reason they used a hefty portion of their TPE on him, the reason he plays in general is shot making and offensive production. And he's not doing that. So I could understand if he's lost his confidence a little bit and just uncertainty in his role out there because he's barely played with his new team. I would be worried about it if it goes another week or two, maybe another week, I'd start to worry. But I would also be equally unsurprised if he just has 30 points in the next game. He just explodes, makes every shot he looks at, because it seems like that's the way his Celtics career is gone.
So that's just what it's going to be with Evan Fournier. It's going to be an all or nothing kind of guy.
I think that's reasonable to assume. You either get 2 points in 40 minutes. Or 48 points in 40 minutes.
The thing that worries me most, though, is before he got COVID, before his insane shooting streak, he was shooting. He was missing, but at least he was shooting. These last two games, he's not shooting very much. He's not even looking for his shot. So I think that concerns me more than the fact that his shots just aren't falling.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a guy that does kind of have to work hard for open shots. So if he's not really doing that and not looking for them, then he doesn't really... What's he on the court to do?
Right.
If he's not even looking.
Seems like he succeeds a lot in taking tight window shots and making them, like coming off a handoff and just being aggressive and rising up. So if he's not being aggressive, those shots really won't feel like they're presenting themselves to him. So that could be just a reason why he's not even looking.
Mm-hmm. And one last person that I never thought I'd say this is, should we be worried about Jason Tatum right now? Even though he had 44 points in a game, 53 points in a game. Mm-hmm. We're not too far off of those performances, but Tatum has looked pretty passive and not very aggressive in trying to get his points this past week. And he's also got 19 turnovers in the last four games. Is that just because he's tired?
I gotta believe it is.
Yeah.
Just because the shooting is, it feels like an anomaly. The turnovers, maybe not so much. We know he's turnover prone from time to time. But I have to believe he's exhausted. He's got to be. Like, when's the last time this guy had a break? Like, Jaylen, I know he's had his injuries here and there that he's needed to sit out. But Jaylen's gotten a few chances to rest. Kemba's gotten some chances to rest. Smart should be fresh. He missed about a month plus. Tatum's the only guy who's kind of, he was out 2 weeks for COVID-19. But he's the only guy really that's just been going full tilt this entire time. And I just think he just needs a day off.
Yeah, I don't think missing time due to COVID counts as time off.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not exactly relaxing. But, I think he'd also be frustrated and maybe just tired of taking the role that he has to in this offense.
Yeah.
Where he has to almost score 30 plus points a night.
I mean, dish out like 8 assists.
Yeah, and especially if you're playing like that, and then you watch a player like Grant Williams that you're trying to get an assist to on a fast break, miss a wide open dunk.
Brutal.
You gotta just like quit at that point. You mentally checked out for the rest of the game. That's gotta be absolutely heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been a good sport about it, definitely.
Yeah, he has. Some of his body language sometimes is kind of concerning, but it's not like it's unwarranted.
Right.
If Peyton Pritchard isn't on, if he's not having a good shooting night, then there is nobody to help him out.
Yeah, the way the Celtics are constructed and the way they've had to play all year shorthanded, they've needed, an all NBA performance out of him, like a first team all NBA performance out of him to win. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the 6-game winning streak happened to be a stretch of play where he was he hit another level because he felt good physically. And then to follow it up, a lot of, his main running mates are out. He's the only one out there. He's, facing, every defense is geared to stop him. And he needs to score 30 or so. And pass to, wide open scrubs who can't hit a spot up three. So I could see where the fatigue can come in. But this is what it's like to be the guy, though.
He signed up to
be that guy. Yeah. If he wants to be that guy, you gotta play like that.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true. If you're going to get paid like that, you know what you signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not to this extreme, but you still have to do what you can. So, in the bigger picture, if you're Danny Ainge, what do you think you do this offseason? And let me elaborate a little bit. The only semblance of consistency the Celtics have shown all season has been in this about a 10-game window, give or take. That seems to be behind us now. Other than that, this has been a season from hell. So which version of the Celtics are you going to believe when you're making your plan for the offseason? Are you going to take this horrible team that it's been for the bulk of the season and kind of blow it up but kind of make these extreme moves? Or do you just kind of try to patch things up, maybe shore up the bench a little bit and run it back? Which way do you think he should go?
I think he should listen to this particular episode of the Celtics Journal podcast. And when you earlier, when you talked about how there's seven guys that are just set in stone, the top seven guys on the team, rotation wise, just a lock to play. You maybe only need give or take one or two guys more to make a, you know, a championship level playoff rotation. Because I think, you know, top eight guys, if you line it all up, the Celtics are still up there, even though they've had their trials this year. So I think you look at that and you say, that's solid. I like them. When they're all on the floor together, they're really good. Man.
Okay.
Man, 8 through 15, though, that will require some attention.
Yeah, that's because, bottom of the league.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to build a deep team like we saw in, like, 2018-19, where there were 12 to 14 guys who could definitely play. Like, Tice, who was a starter this year, could barely get on the floor. But you need something. You can't just depend on some of these players like Williams or Ogilvy or Edwards, where you just don't know if you're going to get anything out of them. That's tough on the coaches. That's tough on the players in front of them because they always have to carry this absurd load. And it's something we've seen this year where if one or two of the main guys are out, the guys coming in to replace them are just dog shit. Excuse me. But, like, that's the way they've been.
It's true. So, the only real option the Celtics have to make an impactful difference on their roster right now is using the rest of the TPE or trading away somebody with a bigger contract.
Yep.
So, either way, I think they're going to have to kind of look in the mirror this offseason, unless you think they're one player that's in that $10 million range away, which I don't, but that's a topic for another day.
For sure. And I think if you're expecting the guy they'll get or guys they'll get with the rest of the traded player exception, if you're expecting that to put you in a class above the Nets right away, like, or even a class with the Nets right away, you need to reassess and just lower your expectations a bit.
Yeah, exactly. So I also wanted to look ahead to this upcoming week. The Celtics have four games going up against the Thunder, the Hornets again, the Spurs, and the Trailblazers.
Is there a back-to-back in there? I feel like there is.
There is. Thunder, then Hornets.
Thunder and then Hornets. Okay.
Thunder on Tuesday, Hornets on Wednesday.
Okay.
So, the Thunder, starting it off, have won, or lost, excuse me, 13 games in a row?
Yeah, you said one. I'm like, that doesn't go with the Thunder right now, winning.
No. They are not even pretending like they're trying to. It looked like they were kind of a feisty team earlier in the season, and then they really just, like, you know what, we're gonna lose every game. Because they don't have enough picks.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. They're tanking. I understand. But it's like, come on. This should be a win. Pretend.
Yeah. Well, the Celtics are going to go ahead and they're going to win that one. It would be a new low. And that would really be saying something if they lose to the Thunder.
Yeah.
But the Hornets are next on Wednesday. They're the second night of a back-to-back, too. Both the Celtics and Hornets will be on the second night of a back-to-back. It's in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Celtics are going to exercise some demons right there. I think they're going to win that, too.
Yeah, I think with the way they came out just completely flat on Sunday afternoon against that team, they're not going to get surprised by the Hornets, you know, playing with that level of effort and that level of speed. There's no reason why. And you said they're on the Hornets are on a back-to-back as well?
Correct.
Yeah, there's no reason why the Celtics shouldn't get up for that game and blow the doors off of them, honestly. Because I've got to believe you're going to beat the Thunder handedly to the point where maybe you can rest your main guys for maybe 3 minutes, not a full five or six, or else the bench squad will give the lead away. But maybe you have a little bit of
teams in the NBA.
Even, yeah. But yeah, maybe a little bit of rest going into that Charlotte game. But no reason why they shouldn't go 2-0 there.
Yeah, I'm hoping they can kind of shake the rust off a little bit with the Thunder game, get a little bit of their confidence back, and carry that over into the Hornets game, and then just go back to the way they were playing in that six-game winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're looking at San Antonio, who the Celtics lost to by 4 last time, but we're far removed from that game. That was towards the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
I actually don't really like this game for the Celtics.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're gonna lose this game again. I know the Spurs aren't that good, but Pop seems to know how to play against the Jays a little bit, what makes them kind of uncomfortable, and plus DeJounte Murray kind of gave Kemba at least fits.
Yeah, he's an incredible defender.
He really is, and his arms are crazy long. He's a really, mm-hmm. I love him. I think he's a really good player.
Yep.
The Celtics are home for this game, keep in mind, but I think this is a trap game where they're going to lose.
Yeah, I can see it. I could see it. And also the Spurs last time they played the Celtics, I'm pretty sure they didn't have Derek White for that game, and he's back and kind of fully acclimated to what the Spurs are doing now. So there's a bit of a situation in the backcourt where they have these two bigger long guards who can both defend and get to the basket and make plays. So if the Celtics come out flat, which they've been prone to do after wins or even after acceptable losses, like the changeover from the Nets game to the Hornets game, I could see this as a loss. Although I hate to just predict 3-0, but
yeah, you're gonna be counting for Adam.
Adam's usually picking the wins.
Last week. Yeah, he picked a lot of wins, so he's going to be picking a lot of wins in a row if you're going 3-0 here.
I'll go with a win here, mostly because if this week was kind of an anomaly in the grand scheme of, you know, we were playing well, we just didn't have anybody again, and we're tired. Like, okay, well then show me something this week. Show me something by beating the Spurs, who are a good team, but not as good as you. Just beat them.
Yeah. I hope they do. I think that's going to be a game that they drop. Going into Sunday, though, they play the Trailblazers, who are currently sitting 7th in the West, having lost 5 in a row to this point.
Really falling off.
Yeah. I would be concerned if I'm them, and I think I'm going to take the Celtics beating them again. I think the Celtics match up with them really well. I think they're a one trick pony.
Yep.
It's a good trick, don't get me wrong. You got Dame and CJ, but so it's easier said than done to stop those guys, but Smart's done an exceptional job on both of them.
Yep.
And the way that they're playing, I don't think they can match up with the Celtics very well. And if they try to play Enes Kanter again, it's going to be the same deal. You just run
pick
and
rolls
on him all day. We're not on the second night of a back-to-back. So Kemba's playing, which will be the worst thing ever for Enes.
Yeah.
So you're either looking at pick and rolls at Enes Kanter, or you're playing like Nurkic the entire game.
Yeah, and Nurkic just had his injury history. Those minutes should be managed. Yeah, if I were a coach and Enes Kanter was on the floor and I had a good point guard, it'd be the only play I run. It's just a pick and roll at Enes Kanter. And I wonder, I wonder how different it's going to be for Kemba in particular after going up against DeJounte Murray and Derek White one night, and then two nights later, the Blazers and their stifling defense, which probably ranks 29th still in the league, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and when if you're looking at just when Cantor's on the floor, they're in last by a healthy margin.
Yes. Doesn't surprise me.
No. So are you picking the Celtics to win that? You're going for the clean sweep after this week? You're feeling confident?
I guess this is just what I do as I talk myself into these wins. But no... No, I'm going to... All right, so I'm going to go a loss here because with the way you're talking about the Blazers, they're reeling. They're falling into the play-in scenario. They're going to need to turn it around at some point. And if I know Dame, which I feel like I do at this point, his team's never crater unless it's in a playoff series against Rajon Rondo. So I'm gonna go with the Trailblazers. So that my prediction, I guess, will be a 3-1 week for the Celts.
Okay, so the thing is with the Trailblazers, they're currently in the play-in tournament. They're only a half game ahead of the Grizzlies. They play the Grizzlies 3 times out of 4 games for them, I believe. Or at least in really close to each other, they play them 3 times. And they're only a half game ahead of the Grizzlies for the 8th spot. Yeah, see, they play the Grizzlies again on Wednesday.
Okay.
3 times out of the 4 games. And they've lost the previous 2 to them. So, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm betting against Damian Lillard and the Trailblazers in this game. We're both going 3-1, but the difference will be to the Trailblazers and the Spurs games. Just to recap, correct?
Yep, I think that sounds right.
Okay. Hey, Adam's going to be rooting for you. He's falling behind.
Well, yeah. I'll try to deliver him a nice little comeback. Although, if my last appearance on this podcast has any bearing on my ability to predict the future, this might be it for Adam and his run.
So, I know that Brad Stevens has never done this, but whenever there are back-to-back games, he always plays Kemba the first game and then rests in the second. However, Kemba did get hurt in that Hornets game. He did come back, but he could probably use an extra day's rest. So what do you think the chances are of Kemba resting against the Thunder and then playing against the Hornets on that back-to-back like that?
Yeah, I think if there was a time to do it, it would be this particular back-to-back. You like to just play who's available. I get it. Like with the back-to-back stuff, you just play who you have, and then if Kemba's not available on the second night, it's all right. But I just feel like with this season, it would really help to just give Kemba the night off against OKC. You should beat them without him anyway. And then have him back on the second night against a better team when his teammates like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are probably spent from the night before. I just feel like it just makes more sense.
I know that teams and coaches always say that they're not watching the standings, but we're getting down the stretch here, and it might be time to do that, where you want to have your full squad going up against a team that's kind of in the same range as you in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
So I think it really should happen.
Yeah, maybe that injury on Sunday is a good excuse to just do it that way.
Yeah, you don't even have to say that you're watching the standings. You can just be like, he needed the extra day. So easy. But as a new segment here, we are going to wrap things up with our final thoughts. Would you like to take it away first?
Yes. Yes, I came prepared with a final thought. Okay. So mine is not Celtics related. It might be. It's a little Celtics related. So the Nets and just the overall title picture this year. I feel like it hasn't been talked about a ton just because the Lakers have been dealing with injuries and the Clippers are so inconsistent. And nobody truly believes in the Sixers because they probably shouldn't truly believe in the Sixers yet. But the Nets have been consistently the team that is in the center of the title discussion. And I feel like the James Harden trade could have gone one or two ways, depending on how Harden himself reacted to the move and like catered his play style to help the Nets rather than do what he did with the Rockets all along. But also I feel like Kyrie Irving was the main pivot point. Is that the right thing to say? Like, I feel like the way Kyrie handled that situation, if he handled it well, they'd be in a good spot for, you know, to win the championship. And if he didn't, it could all implode and the Nets would be a disaster. But he handed the offense to James Harden. He took a back seat, per se, as the primary ball handler for, you know, the best offense of all time. He managed to stay efficient in scoring in bunches, basically hitting every shot he looks at. And Harden also catered his game to be more of a pass-first superstar. So I think Harden deserves credit, but also Kyrie in making that conscious decision to say this team is better off with him at the, him with the keys and me just kind of filling in where it's necessary. And I feel like the Nets are going to win a championship because of that. So the fact that Kyrie made... I feel like a lot of people get on Kyrie for his decision making, and it's usually warranted because he is a whack job at times, but he also deserves credit for this adjustment he's made, because if the Nets end up winning, which it looks like they will, and you look for the reason why, I think Kyrie and Harden, presumed to be two of the most difficult people to play with in the NBA. Both kind of adjusting their games for the greater good. I think that's why they're going to win.
So you're going to come on to our Celtics podcast and compliment Kyrie Irving?
I know.
Shower him with praise?
It was a big swing I took, and I know the fan base has their certain feelings about him. And I think they're all like, that's what I'm trying to say, is that the Kyrie Irving that the Celtics fans saw, and the one that took the back seat to James Harden and became a shooting guard overnight for the betterment of his team. Like, I feel like these are two different people. And I think it's like kind of the moral of the story is we paint some of these players into boxes and expecting them to act and play a certain way all the time. But the great ones adjust. They see what they need to do. They adjust and they keep winning. So I think Kyrie had, you know, when we look back, we'll think about the shot he made with Cleveland. We'll think about him asking to get traded from a team with LeBron James on it. And we'll look at his departure from Boston. But this has got to be up there. It's like, if they end up winning, this has got to be up there with one of his biggest accomplishments.
What makes it so annoying, I don't disagree with you, but what makes it so annoying as a Celtics fan is that this is what we were asking him to do. Kind of just adjust his play to fit the personnel around him. And his refusal to do so doomed one of the best rebuilding jobs in I don't even know how long, as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
And he just destroyed an unbelievably constructed team. And then he goes to the Nets and there is no power struggle at all.
Nope.
I thought what was going to bring down the Nets was really fighting over the hierarchy on their team. And that was so seamless, not really no reporting coming out of it. And what's a bigger threat to them is their injuries right now, and it's really has nothing to do with the personalities or the egos on their team, and that is infuriating to me as a Celtics
fan. Yeah, no, and I understand that because I think his biggest failure in Boston was as a leader and making the right decision in terms of how to manage the dynamics between him and Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, like the young, the quote-unquote young guys. And it sucks that he couldn't figure that out, but maybe he, you know, he took what happened to Boston and he saw how him worrying about the hierarchy on the team kind of dismantled that entire situation. Maybe he learned from that.
It's giving him a lot of credit.
Took it to, I know I am, but it's just the facts. Like, this is what he's done. And it just seems like he took one failure, learned from it, and applied it to another situation, and it's working out beautifully for him. And I can't yeah. fault that. I can fault him basically throwing the Buck series. That, I think, should live on his resume. Trying to guard Giannis down the stretch of games, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, he had enough of that season and was just ready to leave, and he made that very clear.
Yeah.
But I guess you could be right. He's a slow learner, but at least he got there.
No, yeah, I will not stop you from throwing digs at him because he deserves most of them.
You're not going to get me to compliment that guy. The only thing I'll say is I believe his heart is in the right place. He just really conducts himself as a psychopath from time to time. But
hey. All right, before you can bust, let's get to your final thought. Before you can bust talking yeah. about Kyrie.
Not a fan of your final thought, to say the least.
It's okay.
My final thought is about the Knicks.
We'll stay in New York. And
yeah, we're staying in New York. And how I just really don't believe in this team. A team that's led by Julius Randle going into the playoffs, I think, isn't going to make a splash at all. It's hard to say that again about a team that has won 9 straight games and how the entire world, or NBA world, is rooting for their success. I just don't buy it. They are a team that plays really hard. That's going to be annoying to go up against. But Julius Randle is your main guy. I don't believe that you can do that. His ISO numbers are really good this year. So, and that bodes well for them in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have any moves. The way I've really described him is like a D-grade Zion Williamson. So the only thing he's really got going for him is a little bit of a post move and these fadeaway contested mid-range jumpers. And I think that's something that you can game plan against on a night-to-night basis. In the regular season, that's fine. But in a playoff series against a competent team, they're not going to win anything. So if I'm the Celtics going into the playoffs, I would rather play them than Miami or Atlanta.
Just from a standpoint of they don't have enough juice on offense, enough shot creation to get it done for, you know, 4 wins in a series.
Exactly. I mean, I don't even believe in the people around Julius Randle. So, and as somebody who doesn't believe in Julius Randle himself, that's not a really good team. I think they're winning right now with effort, which is great. Like, good for them. You can win a lot of games with effort. But I don't think that their talent stacks up against anybody really in the playoffs.
And I think it's something Celtics fans kind of can relate to. Back in the Isaiah days, it was a similar situation where it was a great regular season team, won by playing harder than their opponent, and they had, you know, 1 to 2 guys they could run the offense through and get, you know, efficient production on a regular basis. But when it came to the playoffs, playing hard isn't really an advantage anymore because everybody's playing hard.
Yeah, playing hard is something that you playing hard is something that you need, which is what, like, if you have a really good, very talented team that plays hard, then you you've got something.
Yep.
But that's not what the Knicks really have.
No. I mean, it's fun. It's definitely fun to watch. Just not.
Yeah, it's a good story, but it's going to come to a an end pretty abruptly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all right. I mean, they aren't exactly expecting to do much beyond the first round this year anyway. So it's just Knicks fans can just enjoy this and, you know, stay out of our way in general.
Yeah, they've been tortured for a long time. I'm not going to feel bad for them because they're New York fans. So, but you know what? I'll say it. They deserve it in some capacity.
Yeah, how can you root against Tibbs?
That's true. I question some of the things that he does, but I do like him. I think he's a good defensive coach. He gets his players to show up on a night-to-night basis, but he does also play guys like Julius Randle like 38 minutes a game. Yeah. So he kind of ruins some players if he's their coach for too long.
Yeah.
Looking at Luol Deng. I liked Luol Deng.
Oh, yeah. Luol Deng just run into the ground. And hopefully, you know, he's dealing with younger players who can handle that workload right now. So maybe it's more sustainable for him to coach a young team.
Yeah, it might not be bad now. And I can't even be really that mad about Luol Deng because without him doing that, the Lakers might get a serviceable player.
True. You can't have that.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's not a lot. But that will wrap it up for us today. Please rate and review. It really helps us out a lot. And follow us at the Celtics Journal on Instagram and Twitter.